It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman here. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, of course, we have the ultimate Chicago movie cage match, Blues Brothers versus Uncle Buck. There are a lot of texts that are coming in. Blues Brothers is the odds-on favorite tonight, but both Mario Smith and Molly Green will be here to fight it out and duke it out and make an argument for either movie.
I kind of like Uncle Buck better, to be honest with you.
Right? It's the heart for soul. That's what we've been saying.
Oh, man, when he throws the quarter at that principal and says, "Here's a quarter. Go downtown and have a rat chew that thing off your face."
That's the voice of Tony Fitzpatrick, who is in studio for the 9 o'clock hour. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
We were just talking. Pete and I were just talking about, you know, for all the great people that we've had on this program, we have not had you on this program. It blows my mind, I feel.
I began to feel like, you know, the girl doesn't get asked to the prom. I mean, all my friends have done this. You've done Justin's show. What a great guy, you know? It's like, no, man.
It was our loss, but now we have figured it out, and
well,
we have
thanks.
You in studio.
This is great.
So you got some shows coming up, and Tony.
Yeah, they open Friday night.
Friday night, we've got The Sky at Diversey, and also A Half Dozen Pigeon Stories, and we're going to talk about both. To say you're just an artist is an understatement. You're an actor. I mean, down the line, you are just a true Chicagoan. You've done so many things. Do you try to avoid labels? I mean, what's first for you?
I think they're all part of the same body of work, you know? I mean, I've had people say, well, are you an actor who makes art, or are you an artist who acts? And it's like, I've always thought it was all part of the same thing. I guess if somebody, you know, just kind of held my feet over the fire, just say I'm an artist. And sometimes I'll do that by acting, sometimes by writing, sometimes making, you know, paintings and drawings and
you create
collages.
Things, right?
Yeah,
right.
I make stuff. I mean, I'm, you know, some years ago, I began to realize like a lot of people got priced out of my work, so I started making really high quality posters of it, and I did the Renegade Craft Fair for the first time. It was just such a treat to be part of that culture. All the people there, they just make stuff, you know? And it was so much, I think, healthier than like art fairs.
Why is it important to you to have, when you talk about priced out, a lot of artists say, great, I'm on my way, I'm making money, it's not.
Yeah,
but why is it important to you to think about who can't afford,
you know,
a Tony Fitzpatrick piece?
Keith Haring was a friend of mine when he was alive, and one of the reasons they had the pop shop was so that everybody could have one, you know. And I think there's something democratic in the spirit of that, you know. So I mean, we wanted to keep, you know, make things affordable, you know. I mean, every show I have, I make a button with Busy Beaver, and we give them away to hand out to people. It's a nice way of saying thank you. Thank you for thinking of me. Thank you for coming to the show. And, I really want people to be able to access it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sometimes disappointed that the institutions, the museums, charge so much to get in, and that I sometimes wonder who they're trying to keep out.
Yeah, right. You know? And you think about that argument, and it really kind of went by the wayside when they got rid of the free days and different places.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, the Art Institute still has a free day, you know, Tuesday, and I think perhaps I don't know if the MCA does or not. I've not been there in a while, you know. So, but I, you know, in Europe, a great many of those museums are free.
You have been able to sort of find this contrast as an artist to be able to be shown in the highest the sort of falutin art exhibit or art museums in the world,
the
in
Met.
New York,
I
the
mean,
Met,
I
yeah,
was
of course,
the Met this year,
and be able to still, you know, be able to put art on buttons and give it
absolutely
away for free.
Absolutely.
How do you balance that? How do you do that as an artist?
I think you got to take, you know, you got to assess what's really important to you, and You know, I mean, I also, you know, put my work on beer cans and wine labels.
And album covers. And
absolutely. Right. You know, I've done a great many album covers for Steve Earle and Lou Reed, the Neville Brothers, Frank Catalano, the great Chicago sax player. Yeah, I mean, for me, he's the best living saxophone player. I want people to know that I'm not going away, you know. And you know, book covers of including, you know, most of my own books, which I'm working on a book right now. It'll be out the middle of next year. I want people to be able to I want to be accessible to people, and I think. And on that score, I've been successful.
Well, I want to talk about the new work. I've got a lot of questions. Tony Fitzpatrick in studio. He's got two shows opening up this Friday night.
Yeah, they're like 20 feet from each
other. They're 20 feet from each other.
So don't worry.
And I want to talk about the space.
You're not
going
to have to bounce all over town, you know?
You don't have to get on a train or a bus.
Yeah, exactly.
They're right next door to each other at
1513. Beautiful Western Avenue, plenty of parking.
1513 Northwestern Adventureland Gallery in the Dime, right next to each other.
Yeah, and when you're in like kind of a sketchy upcoming neighborhood, it's always good to say plenty of parking. You know?
Plenty of parking. That's a plus. All right, Tony Fitzpatrick is in studio. We'll take our first break here. We come back. We'll have more with Tony here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Justin Kaufman here with Tony Fitzpatrick, the artist, the actor, the Renaissance man, rock on tour. What do we like?
Anything to avoid honest work, man. anything to, you know, I mean, look at me. I was designed for like manual labor, and thankfully, I've been able to slip that for the last close to 40 years.
Looking at your, I'm amazed too, and I want to ask you just about social media because it's so much access to your work. If I go to your Instagram account or your Twitter account, whatever it might be, I am getting the work that you did, and you're putting screenshots and putting
absolutely.
The text up and everything
absolutely.
Like that. But it's amazing to me because a lot of it is about, you'll explain why it, you know, who this is or what this painting is, and it'll throw back to 80s Tribeca or
absolutely.
90, you know, where you were in 1991, where you were in the 70s, whatever it is,
you
but
know,
it shows.
I mean, the most powerful tool I have in my arsenal is memory, you know, and I love storytelling. I love, I honestly think of this work as, in a way, it's kind of an evolved kind of storytelling. And you know, when I started using text in my work, you know, I mean, some people were like, well, you're putting words in your work. It's like, yeah, because it's mine. It's, you know, I'll do what I want.
Yeah, and you're also good at it.
Yeah, and I there was a time when I wanted my poems and my drawings to become the same thing. And then I started adding collaged elements, and there seemed to be this kind of eureka moment, you know, because, I mean, stuff normal people throw away, you know, I hoard it. I have scads of the stuff, you know, matchbooks, wrappers, cigar rings, you know, there was a parking garage in Manhattan that had the most beautiful, you know, stubs, tickets, you know, all these different weird colors on them. And I used to walk around because inevitably people get their car and they throw the thing. So I'd pick up five or six of them. And the guy who worked at the garage, it was in Chelsea, it was on 23rd Street. And he goes, what are you doing? I said, well, I use these in my collages. He goes, I got bags of them. I said, you want to sell them? And he said, he goes, hell, I'll give them to you, you know? And I struck up an odd kind of friendship with that guy. I think all of those things reflect a history. And when my friend John Hogan, the great chef, his dad, Red, gave me a great many matchbooks that he collected. He was a cash register repairman. And he, you know, would drive around the city from job to job, and he'd grab a matchbook. And at the time, he was also, you know, a smoker. And It was the cheapest, most, you know, kind of middle class way of advertising your business.
Right,
and
right.
When he gave me all of these matchbooks, I looked into that box and I thought, there's a codified history of Chicago in here. And I'd be a fool not to, you know,
use it or
not to give it a second life and a new definition.
I always, you know, and you've said this before in some of your artist statements and reading into it, just that you seem to be inspired by street life and Chicago street life.
Absolutely.
What does that mean? Because is this what you mean? What we're talking about here?
What happens between us as Chicagoans every day? You know, we were talking about this right before I came on the air. It's like there are mornings I wake up and I hate Chicago for its thoughtless cruelty for the kids laying in the street shot and just the venality and politicians. You know, I just don't like them. You know, I met a couple honest ones in my life, and they can't redeem the other ones, though. You know, I was never a fan of Emmanuel. I still think Chicago is one of the most fascinating stories in the world, and I always want to see what happens next. I've attempted to leave. I mean, I was full on ready to move to New Orleans, and because their politics are so clean, right? I had a heart attack and I had heart surgery, and friends of mine in New Orleans said, "Look, there's nothing down here you can eat, Bunky. You'll be dead in a year," you know. So, and I'm glad I stayed. I think the Emmanuel years here taught us a great deal about ourselves as a city.
As an
artist, it was fascinating.
And I was going to say, your job as an artist, you know, how much of it is to reflect what's happening in the city, or what the actual current is against what might be happening in politics
I don't. You know, I mean, mostly when Ron was mayor, I was making pictures of birds, which kind of turned me into an activist for the environment, because I realized that Chicago has a huge and complex ecosystem, and there are birds here you would be gobsmacked that they're here. The plovers that were out on Montrose Point, a music festival canceled to avoid endangering that
vessel. You've been in Chicago your entire life. Can you imagine that headline 20 years ago, 30 years ago? It says, "We've shut down a music festival for the birds," right?
You know what? We got smart. We got smarter. You know, as go, we realize that extinctions don't happen because of ecological cataclysm anymore. They happen a thousand paper cuts. Somebody ruins a habitat. Somebody pollutes a waterway. And those are the causes. And the acceleration of extinction now, and not just for birds, but for just creatures, you know, from, you know, whales down to, bugs.
Bees.
Exactly. Right. You know, we stand a chance of losing them. And that bell also tolls for us. So,
the idea of you using your art to create around birds, you see that as a sort of a source of activism or an act of activism?
It's kind of become that, because I fell in with these great birding people, you know. You know, namely Jeff Scrintney and Greg Neese and Larry Skillethead Critulis and Fran Morell and just really remarkable folks, you know, who come from all different walks of life, and they share this passion for birds. And, you know, little by little I became, you know, a birder. And And boy, it's added an incredible dimension to my life. I mean, a really wonderful thing, you know.
Knowing your work and knowing, and I want to talk about the sky at diversity too, because that's a lot about. I mean, even the poem and the piece about rock and roll, all that
going on. Yeah.
But beyond it, just in this half hour that we've been talking, you talked about a cash register sales or a repairman, parking attendant,
Red Hogan,
the birders. Now this idea that you are. You almost seek out, because you're curious, these relationships with people that you wouldn't necessarily think Tony Fitzpatrick is.
You know, you don't ever want to stop learning. I mean, yeah, I'm extremely curious. You know, and so was my mentor, Stud Sterkel, you know. And, I'm you know, every time I get in an Uber, I strike up a conversation. I want to know, you know, what kind of the person is tasked with driving me to the gym or driving me to work or have made some incredible friendships that way. I'm about as shy as an ice pick too. So I'll talk to anybody, you know.
You know, for you to
I'll
say
talk to a fire hydrant, you know. How you doing?
How has your outlook on not only your life but your art and where you live changed since your heart surgery?
The glass is half full.
Really?
I mean, I'm so lucky to be alive, it's not even funny. You know, I mean, I had 95% blockage. I had a quadruple bypass. And when they got in there, they realized my mitral valve had ruptured. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really, really fortunate. And after the surgery, I had a postoperative infection. That damn near killed me. So I am glad that I'm hard to kill, you know. I feel lucky. Every day I put my feet on the floor, it's like, wow, you know, gravy.
And how do you think that affects the art that you're producing?
I think it made it infinitely better and less dark and more hopeful and more comedic. You know, I mean, there's actually funny stuff in them now. Yeah. I mean, it was an evolution that needed to happen. You know, I mean, I know you've interviewed Steve Conrad,
you know. We'll talk about that too.
Patriot. He came in to see me in the hospital, and I knew a couple things were going to happen when I got out. I knew I used to have my own etching shop, my own print shop. I knew I was going to lose it because I wouldn't be able to afford it. Thank the fates for Obamacare, which I was covered. But I was still on the hook for about 10% of my hospital bill, and my hospital bill was about $1.5 million, you know, and I was in for 43 days, and I knew I was probably going to lose the print shop. And Steve walked in, and he said, here's a check for $20,000. I want a couple of the drawing collages. I don't know which ones yet. And by the way, Patriot's a go. I need you healthy in about 4 months. So it was like somebody just pulled me out of the grave, you know.
Wow.
I mean, when you're in a hospital for a long time, you can get depressed, and that he also helped smuggle my dogs in to the lobby. Him and my son smuggled my dogs in. So any guy will
smuggle
your
dog,
dogs
right?
in and and put you in a show as great as Patriot. Wow.
Well, let me do this. I should
wash the guy's car every Sunday for the rest of my life.
I want to take a break here. We'll come back in just a couple minutes here. Tony Fitzpatrick is in studio. We're talking about, he's got two shows coming up here on Friday, The Sky at Diversity and A Half Dozen Pigeon Stories. Yeah. They are right next door to each other at 1513 Northwestern
Avenue.
It's
free and free beer.
Free and free beer.
Free beer.
You still know how to throw a party, Tony.
Amen, brother.
We'll take a quick break and more with Tony Fitzpatrick here on 720 WGN. Back here on 720 WGN, Justin Kaufman with Tony Fitzpatrick, the artist, the actor, the Chicagoan, who has two shows coming up this Friday. New work, The Sky at Diversity, and also A Half Dozen Pigeon Stories. Why two of these? Why two of these at the same time?
They're two kind of distinct, different bodies of work.
Okay.
And I'm working on a book And the next book will be called The Sky at Diversity. And a lot of the pieces are about signage in Chicago. And it's odd, since I started making these, three of the signs have been taken down.
Really?
Yeah. Barry's Cut Rate Drugs on Milwaukee Avenue, which, to his credit, my pal Chris Keough, who's one of my collectors and confidants and gives me, great business ideas, he bought that sign. Also, the Three Aces sign that I did, he bought that sign.
Mm.
So eventually, I think all these signs are going to wind up in a pretty cool place. But I did the Heart of Chicago Car Town over on Western Avenue, which I don't know what goes on there. But you go in there to talk to those guys, and it's sketchy. But
as any business that's called Car Town should be.
And I did Manny's,
Yeah.
I miss being able to eat at Manny's. Sometimes I go there now and just watch other people eat.
You say you did the sign, what do you mean you did the sign?
I made images of them. I made
so you're going around
images and poems about them. Yeah,
and you did the Diversity Rock and Bowl, which is really
absolutely, which is a place where my son and all his little bong smoking friends used to go in high school, and the Rock and Bowl. It's got kind of a rich history. It used to be the River Bowl, because it's right there by the river. And I love that sign.
It's a great sign.
And something about those signs, there's just an optimism about them, and a great deal of them come from the middle of the last century. From the 50s, we survived World War II and won it and, basically saved the world. And these guys were out hanging their shingle out.
Yeah, it's fun to watch, too, because when you look at, I was just talking before you came on about Kmart. Kmart is almost gone. And someone just texted in saying there's
one. Before it was Kmart, it was Kresge's.
Kresge's,
yeah.
So, but it was when I was in the old. It was in Valpo, in Indiana. They had the sign in the back, and you could see the stenciling saying electronics.
Yeah,
now you could see it. Like the letters are gone, but the wall still.
I love
showed
the sign.
That. Yeah, it made me think about the days where the signs mattered.
Do you remember Zaire?
Yeah, oh yeah, I had a Zaire in
Zaire
McHenry. Yeah.
Or did you grow up in McHenry?
It was in Wonder Lake, Illinois. Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that's like McHenry County.
Up by the chain of lakes, by Honey Hill Beach. And Bill's ridiculous speech. When you're one of eight children, you have vacations there.
That's where you go, right?
Yeah, or you're on a lake in Illinois. Oh, I can't wait. But all of those things. I think we're. I'm gonna eventually do the Jay's potato chip sign.
Oh yeah,
because they're. They tell a story. They tell who we were, what we ate, where we stayed. I really think those things matter when you talk about history.
Yeah.
History seems to be a great big word, but it's made up of incremental moments. And the signs I'm really enamored of. And I wrote a lot about them. I wrote a lot about them, and I think for the next book, they're kind of a perfect way to lead into that.
Tony Fitzpatrick's in studio with me tonight. We're talking about his new shows and about all your work, and we touched on you were had a big recurring role on Patriots, Steve Conrad's show, which is on Amazon, which I was surprised because it was. It did two seasons, and it's not going to do a third? Is that what the...
So far, they've said they don't plan on doing a third, but I think... I don't know that that's the end of it. Honestly, to a man, if Steve said, hey, we go to another platform and do something, we'd all go.
Yeah.
It was honestly one of the greatest experiences.
What was great about it? Because you've done a lot of film and TV in your time. What was great? What made Steve's show better than others?
That he gave me the trust to bring Jack Birdbath to life, you know? I mean, when I read it, I thought, man, they're going to give this to some name actor. They're not going to give this to me. And I'd been basically doing theater pretty much for years before that. I mean, so much that I didn't really have my SAG benefits anymore. And, I mean, Patriot is the first work I did that I thought mattered, you know. Patriot and Chirac. I mean, I've been in a lot of films. But I'm either, you know, hitting somebody with a board or getting hit with a board. I'm thug one or thug two. I'm bigots. I'm homophobes. I'm wife beaters. I'm guys who intimidate children. When the directors decided to go shopping at Scumbags R Us, you know, evidently I have an entry there, you know. So,
well, you mentioned the idea of these things mattered, right? And you talk about your art and really you tie it together to what happened after your surgery and your time in the hospital. It seems like you're searching out for things that matter.
Yeah, and Patriot also, the second season took me to Paris, which I became the most inveterate Francophile. I was in the cradle of surrealism, so I went and sought out as much art as I could see, as many different people as I could meet. The Victor Hugo Museum, you name it, I went there, and it was just a remarkable experience, you know.
You know, I want to ask you.
I got bit hard by the travel bug. You know, my daughter my daughter went to school in Italy. She went to school in John Cabot University in Rome.
That's great. Wow.
Yeah, she went there, and then she went to American University in Florence. So, Italy and Spain and just.
Beautiful, yeah.
Absolutely. My son Max worked with me on the second half of season two on Patriot. You know, he worked for Steve, and we were almost in tears the day we had to come home. It was like, oh man! First of all, we're going to freeze our ass off when we get to Chicago. It's like 3 degrees, you know. In Paris, if it gets to be like 32 or 33, it's bitterly cold. It's like. Toots, this is sweater weather, okay?
Tony, you mentioned your son, Max. You do the podcast with your son. What does that mean?
The Max and Tony show.
For you to have an experience, and, you know, we haven't even talked about your time on The Loop with Wendy and with others, but you have had a time in radio and a broadcast, and to be able to tell stories and have this podcast with family, with your son, what does that mean to you? The picture itself is amazing.
I learned more from my kids than I learn anywhere, especially music. You know, I mean, Max, he always sends me links to the good stuff, you know, like Twin Peaks and Kami, and he likes hip-hop a lot, you know. He grew up basically calling Steve Earle Uncle Steve, so... I learn a lot, and the kids who work in my studio are much younger than me, you know, I mean, about my kids' age. And I learned that it's really not healthy to like what you know so much, that it should be fluid, and you should leave room for to change.
It sounds, you know? Everything we've heard in this interview, That's your ethos. That's how you live your life, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, whether it's the guy who's in the parking garage, being open-minded.
You'd be surprised what your Uber driver can teach you. And both of my children, Max and Gabby, and Gabby is now working for Steve Conrad, and she's a marvelous writer. You know, my son's an actor. And, yes, I dragged my kid into this horribly hard business, but he's a marvelous actor. I've watched him and things, and I would kill for his comic timing. You know, I would just, He's done Chicago PD. He's about to start an indie, and I've got a day on it. I've learned a lot from my kids and their friends and the younger people who work in my studio. You know, and it's kind of challenged things. You know, my kids will tell me, "Dad, you can't say stuff like that anymore. That's not."
Do you listen to them?
Yeah, I said something about, you know, having been in Tokyo. I was there and went and studied papermaking and looked at a lot of Japanese printmaking because I make lots of etchings. And I said, you know, Tokyo, I was surprised by how similar we are. They're both big consumer societies, you know. And, you know, I was explaining, and my daughter was like, "Dad, you're making it sound like we're completely different, and that's an Orientalist kind of view of the world." And, you know, but she makes me think, you know. My daughter spent the summer helping pull people off the water, off of Greece, you know, working with refugees. And, yeah. She's incredibly bright, you know. They both are. And, you know, they were both smarter than me when they were six. So imagine the stuff they blow by me now. But Max pretty much drives the car for the podcast. It was his idea. And you know, there's a great kind of frisson with his generation and my generation.
That's great.
But we never have trouble putting on a show.
Yeah.
You know, we've always got stuff to talk about. He has a bit of fun with me. And you know what? We'd love to have you on.
Please, I'd love.
Please
just
be a guest.
I would be honored to be. That'd be amazing.
We're going to do one tomorrow. So we're going to have the great American artist Nick Bubash, who's a tattooer, world-renowned tattooer for 40 years.
And where can we find the podcast? Where does it live?
It's on iTunes, okay. And it's on SoundCloud, and, you know.
And it's called Max and Tony.
The Max and Tony Show, and we paste it all over our social media, you know.
Follow Tony Fitzpatrick on social media. His two shows open up. They open up on Friday.
And they're free.
And they're free, and there's free beer.
Free beer. Yeah. You know what? Our beer sponsor, Forbidden Root, they're really good dudes.
There you go. There you go.
I do cans for them. They give us beer for the openings.
Tony Fitzpatrick in studio tonight. We'll take our last break here, and we'll come back and wrap up with Tony Fitzpatrick here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. 720 WGN, Justin Kaufman here. Tony Fitzpatrick is in studio. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, Mario Smith and Molly Green will be... Yeah, you know
Mario's an old friend of mine, man. God, do I go back with Mario?
He is repping Blues Brothers tonight, and Molly is doing Uncle Buck, and they will be arguing over which movie should move on in our tournament.
You know, I like both movies.
It's tough.
Well, yeah, that's going to be a tough choice.
It's going to be tough. Here's some, just to tease out some of them.
I love John Candy so much, so he was such a lovely man.
And he's so good in Uncle Buck, yeah. We were talking Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. He was really good in.
Yeah.
But I think Uncle Buck's his best performance. I just think he's really good in that.
Yeah. I loved him in that.
Yeah. For you, I wanted to ask you this because, you know, a lot of people will say about writers, they always say this about writers, that you know, you got to live your life before you write your novel.
Absolutely.
Go out there and experience the world so you have something to write about.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same for art?
You know what? When I was a young man, I wanted to be a playwright. And I realized I didn't really know what I wanted to say yet. And I didn't write one until I was 50. And then performed them at 16th Street and Steppenwolf. And I think the best thing you can do in the world is keep a journal. You know, a lot of people get frustrated when they go to write a book because they want to write it all in one sitting. You know, the best writers in the world, if they get three paragraphs a day, they're happy. Or a page or two a day. I've known a lot of them. People I admire immensely. And books and writing them, there's something you kind of got to sneak up on.
Is that the same on how you approach your art? I mean, when, especially when you're talking about the specifics and the collaging, that you don't have to do it all in one
day. No, I don't try to do it all in one day. I mean, there was a time when I worked so many hours that, you know, I had a heart attack, you know. I don't get there till around 11:30 or noon because I'm in the gym in the morning. You know, I swim, I walk, I do the rowing machine.
Taking care of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I diet. And I work usually from about noon to about 6:30 or 7 maybe. And if I feel tired, I go home, you know. You know, this is show week, so this week's a little nutty, but I also think when you have the luxury of working on something for 3 or 4 days, I like the spirit of improvisation. I mean, when I start, I kind of know what it's going to look like, but I want to be surprised. I want there to be digressions. I want to, you know, you find with your best work, usually you risk wrecking it a bunch of times until it becomes. It's really kind of a torturous process of editing. And to people who make art and go, well, I tried these and I didn't like them. And, well, you know, I saw a great YouTube video with Peter Dinklage. And he quoted Samuel Beckett. And he goes, fail. Fail a lot. Fail some more and then fail better. And, and that's kind of the process you go through making a piece of art. I mean, there are all kinds of times where I think, boy, this thing's about to, you know, wreck the bed, you know, or and then all of a sudden it turns. Something happens that the thing begins to get arms and legs of its own.
I was going to ask just about, you know, as a we kind of wrap up here, is just about Chicago, because you hear that all the time about fail, whether it's the theater scene or the comedy scene.
Absolutely.
Everyone, creative
Absolutely.
Scenes in Chicago, yeah. Since there's no commerce here, and, you know, it's New York.
Well, yeah, I mean, in Chicago,
is it the same with art?
In Chicago, you know, I think Amy Morton said it best. She said, you know, we knew we weren't going to get rich, so we got good instead. And I think that ethos runs through the art world here. And boy, I'll tell you something. The Chicago art world, there's some great artists working here. You know, Kerry James Marshall. Hebrew Brantley.
Amazing work.
You know, wow. You know, there's just astonishing. Mary Lou Zelazny, Gladys Nilsson. There's a great show at the Elmhurst Museum of all of this Chicago art. Which is refreshing. It kind of revived interest in Sue Ellen Rocha. It was just an incredible amount of really, really gifted people here. Yulia Kuznetsova, Renee Robbins.
As an artist, do you plan to retire?
No,
is it like the
no.
kind of thing where you're going to be an artist till the day you die?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so, you know. What are we going to do, go, like, take up golf or some other ridiculous thing? I mean, you know, I was a caddy for 13 years, and I could never understand what made guys want to wear really stupid-looking pants, goofy shoes, and chase a little white ball around.
Tony Fitzpatrick.
Mark Twain called it a good walk ruined.
A half dozen Pigeon Stories and The Sky at Diversey are both going to be opening on Friday night, 7 to 10.
Man.
The Adventureland Gallery and The Dime right next to each other at 1513 Northwestern. Patriots, you can still see on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
The podcast, Max and Tony Show, all that, all the stuff that you do. Tony Fitzpatrick, pleasure to have you here on the show.
Hey,
appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, man. What a joy it's been to be here.